so that he looks like a Miltonian angel falling with wrath and glory. His exoskeleton sheds its friction armour, as Lucifer might have shed the fetters of heaven, feathers of flame peeling off, fluttering behind. Then a missile slashes the sky, and high-grade explosives christen him mortal once again. The moment we clear the atmosphere, surface gunfire screams up at us, carving holes through our falling swarm. Like a beehive struck, we activate our grav boots and fracture into 1,000 different squadrons, each trying to follow its own coordinates. Enemy ripwings followed us into the atmosphere, but here were more manoeuvrable, and we kill the big fighters with ease. I swoop in on one from behind, with the howlers hot on my tail, and slash it with my razor. I fly off as it spirals down through the clouds, into the ocean below. Anti-aircraft fire screams up at us through the clouds and kills the goal to my right. A howler, though I don't know which till I look at my datapad. Daria the Harpy is dead. Just like that. No sacrifice to save another. No howl of rage at the end. No noble gesture. No emotion. The loyal girl who wore belts of scalps at the Institute, who held Rotback and Screwface in thrall to her strange devices, is gone. A stab of panic goes through me, and I dive through the clouds with the rest of my Legion's vanguard. We streak low over the ocean, where two warships spit up fire. Severo sends two missiles, slithering through the air. They detonate, turning into 12 micro-missiles, which become 12 each. They detonate like corn kernels over fire. War is chaos. It always has been. But technology makes it worse. It changes the fear. At the Institute, I feared men. I feared what Titus and the Jackal could do to me. You see death coming there, and can at least struggle against it. Here, you don't have such luxury. Modern war is fearing the air, the shadows, fearing the silence. Death will come, and I won't even see it. I slam down on a snow-covered mountain. Clouds of vapor rise as I melt a hole in the white from the heat of my red-hot suit. The rest of my squad lands around me, finding safe harbor on the ground. Roaring down, meteor men from metal monsters. Thump, thump, thump. And the fog of war rises. Landfall, I snarl. Severo falls to a knee, pops open his helmet and pukes into the snow. Others join him. Ugly Screwface gasps in sadness. Rotback grips his shoulder. Clown stands guard over them, his red-painted mohawk sideways on his head. Harpy doesn't exist anymore. I didn't know it would be like this. I thought I knew horror. I didn't. More men died in the last minute than I've ever even known. Lorne's fear of war quakes through me. This is war. Chaos. Chance. Death. Severo nods to me, wiping puke from his mouth. Jupiter helps him stand. Strangely, Severo lets him. I look for Mustang's signature on my helmet's datapad. She's alive, with the main element of my force, but we've been separated. I'm with 12 golds and 40 obsidians, specially trained in high-tech military equipment. Exos off! I bark at the obsidians. Omega, guard the perimeter. We shed our clunky exothermal armor to reveal the more agile starshells beneath. I order helmets up. Metal demon and animal faces replace those of friends. But there's beauty in this moment. In the half-seconds where golds and obsidians nod to one another to pass on comfort before going about their tasks, finding solace in the cocoon of duty, in companionship, like I did in the mines. I gather Severo to me along with the howlers. Ragnar, separated from his legion, stands in my shadow. We landed on the day side of the planet. It looks like a meteor shower as the second wave of star shells pierces the atmosphere, leaving trails of black smoke across the fire-scarred blue sky. Hundreds of ground cannons still shoot at the swarm that spreads from horizon to horizon. But slowly those gun streams thin as the guns are targeted from space or eliminated by squads like us on the ground. My squad is 300 kilometers from where we need to be. How did that happen? I call Mustang over the comms. She's 50 kilometers closer to the designated drop zone on some other mountain. Her force is nearer 400 men.
Looks like we're the idiots, Severo says.
We go down the mountainside. We do not fly. Instead, we skip. In the academy, they taught us to think of it like skipping a rock over the surface of the water. We could fly in our grav boots, but flying makes you a target to missiles and anti-aircraft, not to mention enemy hunting parties. So we jump 50 meters into the air, then use our grav boots to jerk us back toward the ground. Missile fire comes from a nearby peak. Severo and his squad deal with it, skipping over 1,000-meter ravines, skimming up the side of a steep rock facade as Ragnar and I press forward. A dull thump echoes over the mountain range as they rid us of the missile turret. The howlers link up with us at the end of the mountain range. We perch on the side of a cliff where low clouds gather. To the left, about 20 kilometers off, rise the towers of distant whitewashed Thessalonica, perched on the craggy coastline of the clear thermic sea. Tactus is home. I feel a pang of sadness. We press north. I watch the towers fade till they're nothing but glinting metal against the coast of that weirdly calm water. Explosions rumble in the distance. I feel the weight of a hand fall on my armored shoulder.
Just like after we took Olympus.
Severo grins, looking down from a new mountain's peak at the land that lies open before us. Except everyone has grav boots here. I check our coordinates in my helmet's HUD. The invasion continues above us. Enemy gunships, rarer now, flit across the sky. One targets us. It roars through a cloud and chews up the ground with chain guns. We take cover in a ravine. Snow kicks up around us. Then a missile slithers out and collapses the rock onto my legs in the explosion, pinning me down. Pebble and Clown stand over my body, shielding me.
Ragnar, I shout. Kill it!
I don't see what he does, but the sound is tremendous as the gunship smokes and spins from the air, teetering toward the ground, and then disappears in a cloud of shrapnel.
Your legs!
Severo asks frantically. They pull the rocks off me. Gears groan and electrical components whir.
Still work.
We descend the snowy mountain range into rugged Martian plains. A mass of heavy infantry like us moves to our left. Their transponders label them ours. But far off, to the right, about 30 kilometers out, where the ground swells into subtropical highlands, a Bologna column skips forward, maybe 300 in separate parties.
Cracked one of our comms, Higgs.
A green communications director in space relays over a new signal.
They're hunting you, Icarus.
My secondary call sign.
Here's when we learn who is winning the heavens, I say.
Severo directs a tracking laser on the enemy squad, just as they set one on us. There's Bobs on the ground in front of us like a frantic fly. We scatter, Severo and I flying away together. And then a rain of fire descends on our enemy from two trajectories. At the same moment, Severo IDs a drone deploying cluster missiles at us. He tags it, and a railgun from nearby Thessalonica fires a projectile that leaves a streak of blue fire across the horizon. The drone disappears in a blossom of red. This is the multi-madness of high-tech war. We make our way to Mustang's coordinates, sensors and eyes peeled for the death that hides in the mountains. It secretes itself in woods of towering god trees, and in the waters of infant seas. A great lake stretches far to our left, while a dormant volcano, so gradual in its incline that it seems little more than a snow-capped hill, broods to our right. I soar higher along the spine of the mountain range we traverse to gain vantage over the surroundings. Periodic topographical data flickers onto my datapad, as drones broadcast data, are shot from the sky, then replaced. It is quiet inside my suit. I cannot hear the wind that whistles around me at this great height. A storm cloud, one of Mars's dramatic thunderheads, rolls in from the distant lake. When it hits the forest below the mountain, the rains come, and lightning slashes the sky. Atop the craggy peak, snow swirls, melting against my suit. I catch movement on a peak nearby. I hold off on discharging my weapon when I see it's no Bellona, but a carved beast. I magnify my vision and see the griffin clinging to the edge of a huge nest set into a narrow stone defile atop the peak, watching in wonder as men fly across her valley below. What a world these gulls have built. My men rejoin me on the next peak over, pausing a moment to check the power cells in our star shells. They won't last all day. Mustang's group slams into the ground around us, causing snow to scatter as 400 star-shelled killers add their strength to ours. She bumps fists with me. Icarus! A voice crackles in my ear. Icarus, do you read me? Broke, I read. What's what? Icarus! Urgent! On! Read me? His signal breaks up, as lightning slashes overhead. Jamming devices from both sides already molest the airwaves. Dara! Ed! Me! Energia! Roke? Roke! I know the plan for the battle above, but the tone of his voice worries me. Comms are all scattered, I tell Mustang. Local frequencies are fine. It's the jammers and the storm. Rain splatters over her armor. Severo points up. Gonna have to get your ass above it to hear. Above, a ship is struck by lightning. Her systems fail and she plummets before reactivating, only to collide with a passing ripwing. Oh, gory hell! I give Ragnar and Jupiter orders to push forward of the mountain range and secure the northern valley for our main force of Grey Legions. While we besiege other cities to divert Bellona attention, to me, Aegea is all that matters. A million men will go at her walls. The Stained opens his hand to me in salute, and then jumps off the mountain peak with Jupiter and 100 obsidian warriors. Mustang and Severo wait below, as I rip up through the lightning-laced clouds with several of my bodyguards. Past the clouds, I float in relative peace, hailing Roke. Icarus! He shouts into the comm. She's here! She's not on Luna or with the main societal fleet! We just found out! Kavix's men found Praetorians on board the War Child! She's here! She came in secret without her fleet! We caught her! Roke! Slow down. What are you saying? Darrow, the Sovereign is on Mars. Her shuttle is trapped behind the shields on Aegea. She is trapped. Roke, I already know. She's why I want Aegea. Chapter 39. At the Wall. He doesn't ask how I knew. Later I'll tell him that I let Aja escape from Europa so we could track her back to the Sovereign via my bomb's radiation signature. She's Octavia's personal killer. Of course, she would return to her side. I've told no one but Mustang, the Jackal, and Severo. I couldn't risk it spreading, especially with how Rogue's been acting. He hangs up the comm without another word, bitterness evident. The vanguard of my force, Ragnar's men, have made landfall in the valley ahead. I see the fat ships descending, then disappearing into the ground where the Valles Marineris stretches kilometers beneath. We have our blues in space lay fire down on Aegea itself. The deluge heats the shield, causing it to pulse opaque. We'll be coming at her, at ground level, along the bottom of the 100-kilometer-wide canyon from the north and south, just through the 200-meter gap her shields must maintain above soil to avoid creating seismic disturbances. I hop off the mountain peak at the head of my bodyguard. Severo and Mustang accompany me as we jump to another peak, then skip through the lower foothills, taking fire as we go. The Sovereign is the key to this war, the key to fracturing this society so the sons of Ares can rise. With her captured, the society itself will wander in confusion, if it even exists, without Octavia atop its throne. Senators and governors will try to seize power. There will be a dozen local wars, fracturing manpower and cohesion. Beneath me, a world of bounty lounges along the bottom of the vast canyon. Lakes and streams, waist-high grasses, trees blooming with flowers, and Spartan pines growing at odd angles from the kilometers-high canyon walls, despite the steep declivity. Above all this, the great floating mountain Olympus reigns. I glimpse the quiet castles and see deer running in the Vale of Mars. But I see no children along the great rivers, no boys and girls in armor. Only memories and muddied earth. The students have already been collected. How strange that must have been, fighting for their lives with medieval weapons, only to be scooped up by dropships as invaders came from space. We meet with Jupiter and Ragnar on one of floating Olympus's white spires. There are dead men in the halls on the slopes.
"They used it as a base," Jupiter says cheerily. "Your stained disagreed with their presumptuousness. I like the beast."
Our men secure the section of the Valles Marineris set aside for the Institute, far east of Aegea in the upper arm of the Grand Canyon. I watch out the window as hundreds of friendly dropships descend on the staging ground, depositing more than 300,000 men in 30 minutes. A gold runs out of each lower ramp, always the first onto enemy soil. "No resistance," I say quietly, my starshell helm popped. I look at Mustang uneasily. She wipes blonde hair from her eyes. "The longer we're dug in, the harder we are to dislodge. Why are they waiting?"
"Want to cluster us up like a bunch of grapes before stomping," Severo guesses. "Atomics?"
"Silly children."
Jupiter goes through the pockets of one of the dead men.
"That's why we have greys. Let them be stomped. They will lubricate our passage."
"No atomics," Mustang says. "Sensors would have picked them up from 100 clicks away." She looks out over the land. "They're waiting because they don't have enough men to contest our passage through the valley. Or we've caught them flat-footed, which is doubtful. Or they deployed too many men to halt Lorne's advance. Or they've created choke points in the valley. Or they marshal them around the citadel. Or there's a trap ahead."
Her mind is a machine.
"There's a trap," she says after a moment. "But they are over-relying upon it to stall us while they relocate men and materiel."
She snorts in contempt. "Static defenses without massive mobile support haven't been relevant since the Maginot Line."
"But they know we don't want to waste the city or the populace," I say.
"They know that." Mustang adjusts her datapad, examining the map, which shrinks our flexibility in tactics.
"Total war is easier," Jupiter grumbles. Let's use the greys to lubricate our passage, then drop bombs at the walls under the shields. Entry gained.
It takes a day to break a city, then 50 years to rebuild.
Mustang snaps.
You want to sign up to oversee the reconstruction?
Do I look like a builder?
Jupiter asks. The passage to Ajia is 80 kilometers wide on average, 7-kilometer-high walls on either side, all farming and agriculture for the city. Valona likely littered the place with mines, if they had time. We didn't exactly tell them we were coming.
Did they have time?
Mustang motions me to the side. I walk with her away from the rest of my command staff, who roll their eyes at one another. The airy palace halls should remind me of past victory, but all I feel is steep melancholy being here. So many memories. So many lost friends, I think, when I see greys landing near Minerva Castle, where Pax and I once dueled.
It's 80 kilometers to the walls from here, she says. We could make the dash as planned. Just because they didn't contest our landing doesn't mean there's something nefarious afoot.
She sees the hesitation in my eyes. We are here for my father just as much as we're here for the Sovereign. We have to move with pace.
You're afraid Lorne is going to kill him if he breaks through the southern city walls first, I guess. Aren't you?
You know their history.
I do.
And do you trust Lorne not to finish an old grudge?
Lorne isn't a murderer.
No. He hurts men who deserve it, like Tactus.
My father deserves it as much as any man. So we must hurry, and you must tell the rest of them about the Sovereign.
Roke found out. Praetorians on the Warchild.
We walk back, and I address my small council.
You know we come here for Augustus, but there's a second reason we press on Aegea. The Sovereign is here.
No shit.
Clan mutters.
Rotback scratches his head.
Gory hell.
In the Citadel?
Pebble asks, excitedly nudging anxious Weed with her knee.
In all probability. We traced Aja here. Residual radiation from the bomb we hit Aja with on Europa. The other assaults are designed to draw manpower away from Aegea so that we will have a chance to break through her walls and capture Octavia before her Ashlord arrives with the full might of her armada.
And if the Sons have done their part, as Ares promised, we should be able to get into the city without fighting through 100,000 armored men and women.
Is Cassius in the city?
Severo asks.
Mustang nods.
We think so.
Severo smiles.
If you come upon Cassius, do not engage him, I say. Nor Carnus, nor Aja.
You'd have us run?
Clown asks, insulted.
I'd have you live, I say. The prize is the Sovereign. Don't be distracted by revenge or pride. If we seize her, we are the new power in the solar system, my friends.
The Howlers share wolfish grins. Severo squares his shoulders.
So let's stop picking our butts.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Friendly ripwings roar overhead to clear out enemy forces along our path.
With all our powers marshaled, we move through the Green Canyon. No creeping column. We go fast. Speeder bikes have more pace than starshells.
Those greys and the ones on spiders tear ahead after the ripwings and heavily armored dropships that will deposit men even closer to the wall.
Flashes ahead indicate they've detonated mines, or the mine killers have done their job. No way to tell.
The canyon here is narrowing.
Verdant canyon walls tower hugely in the distance to either side, colossal and unreal, like the terrain of a greater, larger race than man. I can't see all my force in so vast a place, just the tip of the spear.
We come after the fast-moving greys, a skipping column of dreadful knights and starshells of black.
The deluge of rain falls even harder. Behind us roll tanks and the infantry columns in their hover skiffs, lightly armored vehicles that can carry 100 men in a flatbed. They'll deposit them a kilometer from the walls. Lorne's attack from the south will be much similar.
Drones! Severo shouts through the comm.
A cloud of metal rises toward us from a small depot in the canyon wall to the east. The howlers streak after the threat, their guns ripping holes in the air. Still, drone fire shreds a squad of flying obsidians. They plummet to the ground, bodies unrecognizable. We skim over buildings now. Small towns, resorts, estates, granaries. We find ourselves over a lake. See our shadows as lightning flashes above, silhouetting us. I see the defensive wall now. It falls over the horizon like an iron curtain, 90 kilometers across. At this stage of the canyon, and nearly 200 meters high, it nips the lower edge of the shield. Lakes and rivers don't find their terminus here, but instead run beneath the wall through a thick network of durosteel bars that are strong as ships' hulls. It would take 100 men 10 hours to drill their way through those bars. Most cities do not have walls so massive. They cost too much. Aegea and Corinth are alone in the quality of their fortifications. We could have come through the tunnels that wend through the belly of Mars and connect every city with their mines, but I didn't want to. There are tactics I must save. And there is an example I must set. Assaults like this are not protracted things. I've seen the histories. They are wild and manic. Technology against static objects always wins, so long as the besiegers' resolve never runs dry. Once upon a time, castles were nearly impossible to take through direct assault on a capable garrison without the price of Pyrrhic victory. So field armies laid siege and starved defenders into submission. Now, no one has the patience. Aegea is a city of 20 million souls, but how many of those will give a lick who wins today? There's no difference between the rule of the Bellona and the rule of the Augustus. Coppers and silver will care, but the reds, the browns, the pinks will just watch another master take the chains. Now they'll see ships fill the sky, bombs rupture the air, and they'll huddle in their public tenements and fear faceless marauders. Since the dawn of man, the taking of a city has been echoed by the screams of rape, theft, and drunken horror. Peerless Scar do not partake in such savagery. It is not profitable, nor in keeping with their tastes. But if one takes a city by force, it is the belief of the Golds that the city and all those therein are now property of the conqueror. If you are strong enough, you deserve the spoils. Some spare the spoils. Some give them to the wolves, feeding cities to their obsidian and grey armies as reward for blood spilled. If I can protect this city of Aegea, if I can show them that there is a better breed of man, then just maybe I'll win Aegea's heart. Capture it, protect it, be loved by those in it as I'm loved by my army. But first I must crack her open. All along the vast defensive wall, fire ripples over steel. Like tiny flowers fast blooming upon the 90-kilometer-wide sheer grey wall. 2 faint assaults are led to my left and my right. The rip wings there fire rail guns, sliding sideways as they pump munitions at the wall. Return fire from the turrets on the walls causes my eardrums to shiver and hum. I want to clutch Mustang's hand. A nod from her stills the terror in me, but only just. Greys in combat armor rush forward like so many ants. Rocket teams deploy and soon send slithering death into the defenders. It is too much to absorb, like the space battle above, layers upon layers of activity and counteractivity. Except this has sound. Mines rip holes in my force. The Lona kill squads slip out of the wall 100 meters up, flying out in glory, banners waving, gold glistening. Their shields shimmer as they're lanced by weapon fire. I see an eagle banner amid the Bologna, and ready to set myself against it, thinking it must be Cassia's. But Mustang grabs my arm. "The plan," Mustang reminds me, pointing to the river. "We'll all die against that wall. The plan." Hard to remember. Hard to remember all this chaos is a distraction. What matters is the river and the work done in the night by the suns. If they did it. The river slithers under the wall. 100 meters wide and more deep, it already carries corpses toward the city. I dive into the water. Feel the tension as the current slows, then speeds my path. Fish scatter before us. Odd not feeling the chill. The howlers move like torpedoes beside me. Then Ragnar is with us, along with his group of obsidians. Jupiter, too, all splashing down underwater. Mustang is closest to me. I scan the river ahead, through the murk we kicked up, and find Ares' gift. There. 100 meters deep I see it. If there's one thing Reds can do, it's drill. And the suns spent the night preparing to give us passage into the city. My men will think some elite lurcher squad was sent here before the Armada. They will not question how the huge grates were cut, or how the sensors meant to detect damage to the grating were fooled. "Once more onto the breach," I murmur, as if Roke, Victra, or Tactus could hear me. I activate my grav boots and move forward. The passage is narrow, as it curls beneath the wall near the bottom of the riverbed. We travel 2 abreast, so I take the best fighter with me, Ragnar, as we move first through the underwater passage. My comm crackles with news of the battle above. We're losing at the wall. Ragnar and I clear the tunnel together. I half expected a Bologna ambush, but none comes. The suns did their job well. We wait on the opposite side of the wall, still submerged, 100 meters down at the bottom of the riverbed. The rest of my cadre join Ragnar and me, Mustang, Severo, and the remaining howlers. 50 more golds and 3 times that many obsidians and greys. I speak into my comm when we're all gathered at the bottom of the river. "You know your orders." Severo bumps armored fists with me. Mustang does the same. Ragnar salutes with his fist balled and against his heart. Jupiter yawns into his calm. Clown, Pebble, and Weed rile up the howlers, stirring silt at the bottom of the river. The seconds tick by. My razor is looped around my arm. Pulse fist in my left hand. Feel the thump of my heart and the chill of the pendant on my chest. Hear the crackle of chaos outside. My helldiver hands ball. My eyes close. Severo sends up a probe to see if the riverbank is safe. I'm to find the Sovereign. Ragnar is to open the gates. Mustang is to lower the shield so Roke can send reinforcements, and we can take the city in one fell swoop. I don't want her to leave me, but I can trust no one else with the task. Trust. I must trust that she will live. Trust that her obsidians will protect her, and that she will protect herself. There's a weight pressing down on my heart. A fear that she will not come back. It feels like she's already falling into darkness. If she dies, she'll die believing a lie. I promise myself I'll tell her if we survive this. She deserves that much. Stay alive. stay alive. All of you, stay alive.
Mustang departs, moving farther downriver, following it for kilometers till she reaches the park near the generators. I watch her go and flounder for something to hold on to, someone to pray to. My father is with me, and so is Io. I feel them in the beating of my heart.
I close my eyes.
Severo gathers the probe he sent above and tells me that we are clear. Just a girl playing in the mud above us.
Fight for each other, I say over the comm to those at my side in the riverbed. Or me.
We activate our grav boots and soar through the water, bursting through the surface of the river like inky monsters, our black star shells dripping as we fly up over the riverbank, muddy from rain that fell before the shields were raised to protect the city. Beneath us, a single unarmored brown girl stands, ankle deep in the mud. I stare at her from behind my terrible black helm. She should be hiding with her family, not out in a besieged city. Something is wrong. When she sees us, she snatches from a basket a small globe device. Lightning slashes the sky. Her best dress gathers mud on the hem, turning an even deeper brown.
Shoot her!
Severo snarls. I knock his hand aside. A tree explodes instead. And as I look high above where, on the wall, far out of range of the probe Severo sent up, and far beyond the limits of the EMP globe the girl carries, perch Bellona knights and their obsidian retinue, waiting. The girl presses a button on the globe.
And that's when we begin to die.
Part 4. Ruin. Rise so high, in mud you lie. Carnus au Bellona. Chapter 40. Mud.
The EMP detonates. Sounds like a giant child gasping when pricked by a needle. Our electronics die. Our grav boots sputter. Star shell synapses fail, causing the massive metal suits to be gripped by gravity. We plummet down. Most fall into the mud of the riverbank. I splash into the water, sinking, sinking, ears popping. Down and down till I lodge into the mud of the river bottom. Hitting hard. Legs buckling under the weight of my star shell. Fall on my back. Can't see my men. Only saw shapes moving over the surface of the water as I fell. Now too deep to see anything except how the river darkens with blood. Occasional lightning flashes, silhouette fast sinking bodies. I can't move. My star shell is too heavy. I lie like a turtle, half stuck in the mud at the bottom of the river, confused. Fear rides in me. It happens so fast. Can't even look to my left or my right to see who is with me. My calm is dead. If it weren't, I'd probably hear screams, curses. This star shell brought me from space to land. A life raft. A personal castle in the middle of a war. Now it's my coffin. Heart thudding. Want to scream. Hyperventilating. Terror traps itself on my chest, tensing me, making me swallow the air, eating it as though it'll give me power to move. Slow down. Slow down. Think. Think. Two bodies sink near me. Heavy in their armor, they fall fast to join the others in the bottom. No grace in death, spilling blood as they go. When the killers finish with those stuck in the mud of the riverbank, they'll come for us down here. But they don't need to. I slow my breathing, limited oxygen left in the suit,
Recycler offline. Cassius knew my plan. It had to have been him.
Or was I betrayed?
I told no one but the Sons and Severo and Mustang. None of them could have ratted.
He just knew. That bloody bastard.
If I could surrender, I would. I'd save the lives of those with me. But I don't have a comm. I jerk my body around, trying to push myself off my back. But I'm too lodged in the mud, and my suit is more than 1 ton of metal. I can't shed the weight. Can't get the star shell off. I need the electronics for that. I push up with my arms. Nothing. The mud swallows me. Mustang got away. I think. I hope. Will she know we're down here? I look for Severo, for Ragnar, my howlers. Dark shapes around me. I'm dizzy. Slow the bloody damn breathing. Slow. Think. They won't even bother coming to kill me. I'll die at the bottom of the river, staring up at the surface as one by one my friends fall down to join me. So alone. Severo, Ragnar, Pebble, Weed, Clown. They're dead. Dying. Watching the same thing as me. Or maybe they're on the bank as the Bologna walk among the paralyzed suits of armor, killing at will. I want to cry at my impotence. Stop! Do something! Move!
Rise so high, in mud you lie.
It echoes in my memory. This is the third time they've left me in the muck and mire to die. I grit my teeth till I feel enamel crumble off as I put all my strength into moving my right arm. Slowly, so slowly, it makes an exodus from the sucking pressure of the mud. But it is all that's freed. I won't be able to get off my back. I'm too sunken in, too heavy in the shell. Then I see it. When the EMP blast detonated, it shut down the electrical synapses, which means the suit froze, but the razor still works. And there it is, like a white python around my arm.
It will save your life for the price of a limb.
Those are the words they told me when they put the sling blade in my hand as a boy. Salvation is sacrifice. The razor's impulse is chemical. Its switch will respond to me. It will straighten. But around my arm. I have to be fast. Taking a breath, I close my eyes, feeling the toggle against my suit's thumb. I have to be faster than a licking flame, faster than a pit viper. I flick the switch on. The razor tightens as it straightens, slicing through metal like a knife through pudding. Flick the switch off. It stops as it bites through muscle, but not through bone. I yelp at the terrible pain on my forearm. Water rushes through the shredded arm to cool the burning wound. Then I feel terror. Water. I just opened my suit to water. Idiot. Soon it'll fill. I can already feel it slithering up my neck on the inside. In minutes, two or three, I'll drown. I work my bloody forearm free of the shredded metal carapace and slide the slack razor off so it floats like a tentacle. Then I activate it again. It forms into a deadly question mark, and I angle it toward the other gauntlet. My suit's filled with water in the torso now. The air is thin. Each breath brings more stars behind my eyes. A sensation of lightness as blood seeps from the wounds on my arm. I can survive a long time holding my breath, but I hyperventilated, and now I'm sucking in carbon dioxide. But then my other hand is free of the suit gauntlet, bare and pale in the weird dark light. Gentle clouds of blood plume from it. If I were not made a hell diver, I would die in this riverbed. As it is, I skin off my star shell and the armor beneath. It is my dexterity that saves me. I cannot move my head because of the weight of the helmet. Cannot see where I cut. My skin, and the pain it registers, serve as my eyes. Inch by inch, I remove myself from the star shell. Inch by inch, I drag the deadly blade across my body, shedding my blood and the shell into the water, parting the exoskeleton. I'm like a locust, slipping from its dead husk. Very delicately, I remove the helmet, cutting it off at the neck. I hold my breath and just nick my throat. A scratch, so close to the jugular. My legs are the last part of me I free. I sit up, the broken bits of my suit scratching at my skin, and jerk my right leg out of the hewn metal. I'm alive and wounded in the cold, dark river. Helmet off. Holding my breath as spots bloom across my vision, now I'm able to see the sunken field of men around me at the bottom of the riverbed. I swim over to the largest one and see Ragnar, closed eyes behind his starshell's faceplate. Tears trickle from them. His lungs are large, but there can't be much oxygen left in that suit. He can move better than I could, because of his great strength, but no armored man could swim in this water. I did not think he could cry, yet now he weeps, silently. Not great dramatic tears. These are different, calm. And when he opens his eyes, I see something else in him. Some dormant part of his soul ignites. He was dead, had given in to his fate. Yet here I float in shredded black tactical cloth, bloody, looking positively deranged, but free of my shell. I am his dark hope. I start cutting, even though my own lungs are screaming. I need him. I can't search for Severo, there's no time, and I cannot surface just to be killed on sight. I operate on him like a proper carver, till he wrenches himself free of his exoskeleton. Others have seen what we're doing, but we cannot help them yet. They must hold on. Ragnar and I kick our way through the rough current toward the surface, lungs starving. Ragnar's pale, tattooed body moves through the water with a grace I can't match. I didn't realize obsidians were such swimmers. Makes sense for one born near the ice floes. We're near the surface when my mind loses to my body. 10 feet from the surface, I inhale water. Darkness. Feel mud between my fingers. Something moves through my chest. Water. I vomit it. Hack it out through a rough hand clutched close to my mouth, quieting me. I keep puking through the fingers. Then feel an explosion of pleasure as I gasp finally for air. Beautiful air. Hands still covering my mouth. And for a moment there is nothing, just the pure orgasm of life into my lungs, the full rush of oxygen on empty, aching organs. And suddenly the sound of distant warfare swells, and the groans of men. We're in a field of corpses. The wall towers high overhead. The river runs fast at our feet. It's been minutes since the EMP, but it seems the day has passed and left us behind. Ragnar dragged me into the mud between 2 dead obsidians. 2 Bellona golds, 6 obsidians and 6 greys walk along the dark riverbank, finishing those who lie helpless. We're lucky the rest have quit the slaughter to return to the fight at the wall. Cassius will have led them away. That means he didn't know it was me here, but he was well aware of the hole made by the sons, at least. For me, he would have stayed. Lucky I didn't carry the banner Clan and Weed made for me. Double lucky I didn't let them wear their wolf cloaks. This mud is a graveyard. My soldiers are half buried. Some try to rise in the heavy, dead armor, only to slip back into the mud or be kicked down by the golds and mercilessly butchered. Most lie quiet. A field of armored beetles leaking red. The greys joke to one another, as they go methodically about their task, taking their time on an obsidian stuck on his back, using force pikes to pierce the thick star shell and pin him to the ground like boys tormenting a stranded crab. They finish him eventually with armor-boring bullets called diggers from their rifles. Ragnar gestures to the mud. Half-naked, he and I cake ourselves in the dark, heavy stuff. It cools the tracework lacerations on my body and covers the tattoos on his. I gesture to one of the gold helmets and mime our survivor's oxygen running out. Ragnar nods. I pull a razor from the body of a dead gold. I can't tell who, and hand it to Ragnar. It's only ever seen gold hands. No Praetorian, no obsidian, not even one of those with badges from the Sovereign herself has touched this weapon since the Dark Revolt. To touch it means death by starvation. No possibility of reaching Valhalla. Only hunger and cold and the end. But our enemies will have pulse shields. No other weapon will do. Ragnar drops it like it's made of fire. I shove it back into his trembling hands. They aren't gods. Like shadows pulled from the sticks, we slide forward through the graveyard. Our enemies are not in their fighting bands. Easy targets. I scuttle forward on all fours like some horrible spider, hardly rising from the ground to kill two obsidians before they even turn. Ragnar snaps another's neck and cleaves the second in half, the recoil plate peeling away. Rising from my hands, I sprint at the tallest of the obsidians, jump and bury my blade into his body. I land poorly on my wounded arm. I don't even feel the pain. Too much adrenaline. I see the squad of greys turning, so I fall with the obsidian's body and roll into the mud, lying in shadow and filth among the other corpses. Their recoil rifles and pulse weapons would rip me to ribbons without my shield and armor. Ragnar has disappeared too. I don't know where. Time ticks by. How much oxygen could they have left? The greys hunting us shout something about ghost cloaks. The remaining obsidian groups with the two golds. The greys go through their bodies, finishing my remaining men to flush Ragnar and me out for the golds and obsidian. Leah died like this, down in the mud. I won't. Not again. I rise, not with a scream, not with a howl. Silently. Let the greys try to see me coming. I am fast, and I'm nearly on them when they open fire. I rip toward them, dodging, weaving like a loosed balloon. No beauty to my movement, just frantic terror. I cannot see the bullets, only feel their closeness. Sense the heat of them ripping past me. Feel the punch as I'm hitting the bicep, shock through my body. The skin tears as the bullet goes through flesh, tendon, muscle, then out the other side, nicking bone. I grunt. And then I'm upon them, and they make no noise at all. They missed their window. 12 enemies fall to Lorne's cravat lessons. 12 men and women. The golds and obsidian come upon me now. The golds use their grav boots. Ragnar rises from the mud and hurls his razor through the air like a spear. The huge obsidian falls into the mud as Ragnar rushes the two golds, picking another razor from the ground. I marvel at his power. He grabs one of the golds by the foot as they pass in the air. The pulse shield electrocutes him, sending pain lancing through his body. But he just roars, holding on, with a scream coming not from his throat but his soul. He slams the gold down to the ground like he's chopping wood. He somehow manages to rip the boot off. The lean gold rolls away, shouting, "Stained!" to his friend, who comes back to his aid so they face off with Ragnar together. I run to Ragnar's aid. "Reaper!" One of the golds lets his helmet retract into his armor, revealing the haughty face of a peerless man. Confident in his rank, in his heritage, in his place, His face is all joy. Then it contorts as he sees Ragnar's razor.
You give the blade of your ancestors to a beast!
He glares hate at Ragnar, then down at the razor, furious, confused.
Have you no honor?
I choose not to answer.
Know who you face, Andromedus, the older Gold rages. I am Gaius Aucarthus of Gens Carthii.
We built the columns of Venus. We first sailed the gaps between the inner and outer rims and mined the Helsa cluster.
This isn't the Iliad. Ragnar, kill this fool. We need his grav boots. The Gold spits.
You send a dog to do your fighting?
I am a man!
Ragnar roars louder than the screaming engines of a passing ship. Spittle flying, face ragged with rage. Veins rise in his neck. He howls, rushing forward before I can even raise my blade. He picks up the corpse of the fallen obsidian and uses it to deflect their razors. He punches Gaius. No weapon. Just his fist. He hits him so hard in the pulse shield that the man falls backward. Then he kills the other, hacking through his defenses with mad fury till he cuts him in half. He kicks the top of the corpse aside and batters down Gaius, who sinks into the dark mud as Ragnar thumps forward and, muscles twitching from having touched the pulse shield, holds the razor to the golden man's throat.
Yield to me and live!
Ragnar rumbles. Gaius spits, rising to his knees.
Yield to me as a man yields to another man.
Never!
Gaius's lips curl sourly. He speaks his last words, clear and loud, with spite and courage. All that is good and all that is wicked in these extraordinary people.
I am the peerless legate Gaius Aucarthus. I am the sum of humanity. So yield I do not, for a man cannot yield to a dog.
Then become dirt.
Ragnar pushes the blade home. We ferry our men from the bottom of the river, fast as we can using stolen grav boots, but not fast enough. Severo is not dead, but he's close. I find him buried head first in the riverbank. He's cursing and spitting when I peel him out with the help of Clown and Pebble.
The dead? He asks quietly. My howlers.
Too many, Clown says thinly.
Did Mustang get through?
They all look at me. I think so, I say, but I can't hail her on any comms. We have to hurry, either way. If she's alive and she blows the generator so our reinforcements can land, then the shield falls and the Sovereign has a wide window to escape. Right now, she's bottled up. Severo nods. Little Pebble gives him a hand up. Small Thistle, hardly coming to Ragnar's solar plexus, sees him with a razor in his hand as he frees another obsidian from a dead star shell.
Drop that! She snaps.
Ragnar drops it, and looks to me in a strange panic. I motion him to wait. After we go through the suits of those who fell on the riverbank, we know the count. And it is so devastating that Severo walks away. Weed is dead, Rotback is dead, Harpy died before we hit the ground, and many of the new recruits are dead. Only Thistle, Clown, Screwface, and Pebble are left. 11 of the original 50 obsidians remain. Pebble and Clown touch Weed's face, their matching mohawks flat against their heads as the rain soaks us all. Pebble claws at his chest, her small hands hitting his heart as though that will bring him back. Thistle goes to pull her away as Clown uses mud to straighten Weed's matching mohawk in death. Severo cannot watch. I go stand beside him. I was wrong about war, he says. I can't do this without you.
after a desperate moment. Are you with me? Several. He pulls back and wipes snot from his nose, muddying his face.